With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions. Just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. Camilla may end up as queen, but this dame will always wear the crown.
They say all the world's a stage, and honey, I'm writing the play.
Not that it's a competition, but you win.
Yours is relevant. Yours is literally pulled from the headlines today. It's absolutely relevant. It was really wonderful. Honestly, incredible work.
Thank you. And as the Shakespeare of Housewives tagline writing, just an iconic moment.
An iconic
moment.
You know.
For the people.
We gotta give it up.
Just kiss. Gotta give it up. Listen, I have recorded with this guest once before, and the second that we finished recording, I said, when can I get this person back? You know him as staff writer at Vanity Fair, comedian. He appeared on The Housewife and Hustler, that Hulu documentary about Erica and Tom we all watched 864 times. And also, P.S., recently co-wrote Real Housewives, A Beginner's Guide on Vanity Fair, which I read and have some follow-up questions about. Welcome back to Andy's Girls. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, Chris Murphy.
Oh my gosh, how are you? Sarah, it is so good to see you again. It's been too long, honestly. I should have come back far long ago, but like this seems like the perfect moment. There's such a something beautiful is brewing. The stars are aligning in the Housewives universe. Erica is innocent. That's not true, but she did. That's literally a lie. She's not innocent, but
she literally isn't.
But it's a filing issue. But it is. People do think that, and we should set the record straight that she isn't innocent. But yeah, I feel like that was honestly the perfect time to be back, and I'm so happy to be back.
I mean, I have to tell you, talking about timing is everything. I have thought about you since we recorded. I'm like, when can I get him back? And it does feel like someone was listening, hashtag
God, aka Andrew Cohen,
Mary
and
M. Cosby.
LeBlanc. Mary Ann Cosby, it's the week for people to give her praise.
It is.
And I have to say, I feel the same way about your insight onto all things Housewives.
Wow.
How do you think your theater background inspires the way that you are able to so deftly analyze and also humanize the Housewives? Do you think that there's any kind of connection?
I mean, I gotta say, I am not a facsimile of God like Mary Cosby, but I do feel it's a higher calling, like the theater, where it's like you understand good characters and good drama. You're drawn to them, and you don't have to like all their choices or love everything that they do or say. But you know when you see a star, when you see a well-written, fully developed, fully realized character, and when the drama is potent, and when it is deeply felt, and when it is real, even when it's fake, when it's real. And that's the great thing about the Housewives and theater and plays, because even though it's all fake, it's all real at the same time. So I do think there's a connection in regards to, I do think there's a higher plane of connection for the theater lovers and the Housewives lovers, I will say.
I have to agree. And I also think, you know, in school, part of what you're kind of trained to do is not to villainize the character that you're playing, to really connect with them and to understand the motivations for their behavior. And so many people like to write off the Housewives as saying, like, they're all terrible people. And sure, that's probably, and sure, but what?
So
but
are they. What? So are you. So are you. So am I.
People.
So
we
is everyone.
You know.
Cast the first stone, glass houses, Bible verse. That's something from the Bible. Who among us? So I say,
Who among us? It's Villa Rosa.
Truly. I mean, it's funny. So I wrote that, the Housewives Guide, with my coworkers, Tyler Breitfeller and Mark Allen Berger. And we've gotten a lot of comments. A lot of people who are like, they love to comment. They're like, who cares about the house? Who cares? And it's like, why are you, if you so don't care, then why are you logging on with your one sweet precious life and writing and telling me that you don't care? Because guess what? I know people who care. And clearly you care. They're making you feel some type of way. So let's unpack that, okay? Because I care. And I'm proud to care about these women. They've given me so much. And I hope I can give them even just a little bit in return by helping people get involved, get on the train.
What do you think is behind the idea that caring about housewives is superficial? Do you think that's through a gendered lens, that because it's women's stories, they're somehow like dumber than whatever fakakta mishigas these people are interested in? Like, what do you think is behind that?
Oh yeah, I mean, the viewers can't see, but I am vigorously nodding my head along, very much sort of loudly moaning, yes, that's true. It's that, but it's also, I think people have trouble with the capitalism aspect of sort of grandeur and luxury, as if they don't see it every day all over, you know, America and all these different places. They think it's frivolous. They think it's not serious. They think it's fake, and they're afraid. And I think, honestly, and this is, again, not to make it too theatery, but I think they're afraid to see themselves in it. And we all see ourselves in the best Housewives episodes and the best Housewives. We see ourselves in parts of ourselves that we don't like to see and we don't like to confront. And it makes us wrestle with these things. And people don't like that. People like to think that they live, and this is actually the phrase I was trying to say, that they live in a glass house, and that they're enshrined, that they're perfect. But they're not, and they shouldn't throw stones. And that's what I think. I think it's a deeply psychological. I think it's the Housewives are. It's so deeply psychological, but also so heartfelt and so connected to raw emotions that a lot of people can't handle those two frequencies interacting at the level that it interacts on the Housewives. And so they'd rather just tap out. And they think it says something terrible about America and terrible about society. But babe, look around. Look at what we got. This is what we got. This is where we are, right? You know, they're holding a mirror up to society. And the mirror is Lisa Barlow wielding a blow dryer saying that she's richer than everybody in the room. That's the mirror.
I want to get your thoughts on Lisa Barlow. I need to, but first I have a question for
you. Yes.
Erica Cobb was just on AG and she asked me a question. Oh no, wait, she answered a question. She posed and answered a question that I thought was so genius, because I usually say, who's your spiritual housewife? Who's the person you connect with the most for better or worse? Mm-hmm. Like, who is the person you see yourself in? Sometimes it's as like a, ooh, don't want to go any closer, like me with Shannon Bedore. And sometimes it's like some other stuff. Yeah. You know? I forget if we talked about that the first time you were on AG, but I also want to know the answer to Erica's question, which is, which housewife drew you into Housewives? Wow. Who got you in to be fully invested in Housewives? Was there a Housewives archetype that you remember connecting with who was just like chef's kiss?
Wow, those are two incredible questions. It's so funny because I rarely think in like the full Housewives landscape. Like, I can get really specific. So like with Roni, it's like, I'm a Sonia Sun, Bethany Moon, Tinsley Rising. Like, that's easy. That's like cut and dry. That's my Roni star sign. You know, I love a Candy. You know, in Atlanta, it's like I feel drawn to Candy. I feel drawn to Portia, and I do have a little bit of a fucked up Phaedra sort of manipulator, will lie and scheme, which is something we don't like to admit.
But I love safe space.
So it's and again, it like changes with the wind. It changes with the it sort of moves. So I guess like right now I am feeling really connected with Lisa Barlow, and I don't know what that says. I am feeling very, her back's against the wall. She's feeling a lot of emotions. We'll get there, but like that's right now who I'm like, I'm locked in with her. Like, I'm really locked in with her and her journey, and I'm seeing, and I'm now like projecting my own journey onto her, her relationship with Meredith and her feeling, you know, her trying to mend things with Heather and Whitney. So like I'm there. But to circle back to the first question, what drew me in? I'm really, and this is, I know these are not like maybe the franchises that you would expect, but it was Atlanta and New Jersey for me. It was really Atlanta and New Jersey were the two. That's when I really got in. I didn't really, OC in New York at the beginning. I got there, but my way in was Teresa flipping the table. That was, I mean, it was so close to home. I'm from New Jersey. I'm a Jersey girl, born and raised, obsessed, Garden State, Franklin Lakes. I'm not from there, but I know where it is. So just knowing that was happening so close to where, you know, I went to school and where I grew up, and we went to the same malls, and that was sort of like really hard for me to, that was just immediately just like, wow, the proximity to that. But then also the proximity to Atlanta, I was like, okay, these are like, I have so much family in Atlanta, like, you know, the bouginess, that, you know, the blackness, like, I was like, okay, I was like, okay, I know these people are me, these people, I see my friends and relatives and aunts and uncles and godparents and god sisters and family dynamics. It really, and just when you have a star that is so bright, like NeNe Leakes, it's like hard. It's like you just, she just will suck you into any orbit. And I will say, I love NeNe. And NeNe and Sheree, that dynamic. So I will say those two franchises, Jersey, end of season one, leading up to Caroline, and like, I brought the book to Chateau. That's like literally ingrained in my absolute like DNA. All right. But so is Who Gonna Check Me, Boo? So is Kim in The Wig Shift. So is like, these are all Big Papa. These are all things that sort of made me who I am today. And then you find your way into OC, and you find your way into the Bethany and Jill of it all. And you sort of go down a path. But those were my two sort of opposite but so linked starting points, and I do thank God and the devil every day for them.
And sort of a quasi connected question, when it comes to figuring out which housewives to highlight, which episodes to highlight as a beginner's guide to people, which you guys can all read on Vanity Fair, what was the discussion like with your colleagues? Was there like a large battle to be won about including one moment over another, or did you guys feel like you were pretty much on the same page throughout?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of discussions, and I think the thing is people, and that's the hard part about the guide, is that it is just a guide. It's just the opening salvo. It's like, it's a tasting menu. There are too many iconic moments in every franchise to give every iconic moment. So we had to decide very early on what was our criteria. And our criteria was, okay, if somebody wanted to dive in February 1st to the newest season of Real Housewives of New Jersey, or if somebody wanted to dive into the next season of any franchise with the current cast members as it is, what would they need to know and what would they need to see to have like a pretty good idea of being able to just pick up where they left off, all right? Which means like you got to leave a lot on the cutting room floor. We got some flack. There was a TikTok. I didn't even know TikTok worked like this. Like there's like a TikTok that's going around that's just the article and just sort of like summarizing the article, which is already a summary of the right. franchises. So it's like a summary of a summary and
how
whatnot.
Meta.
Absolutely that's meta. Okay. Absolutely obsessed with that. Go off TikTok. But like some of the comments were like, there is not enough Real Housewives of Atlanta. There are not enough episodes. There are not enough episodes of Potomac. And it's like, we had to narrow it down to like 5 or 6 episodes. I could rattle off 20 episodes that everyone should watch of Real Housewives of Atlanta and of Potomac and of Beverly Hills and of all of these episodes, all of these seasons. But the whole idea is to give you like bare bones, what you need to know to jump in now. So it's like, guess what? Unfortunately, Nene and Kim are not on the show right now. So we actually don't really need to go through the Big Papa journey to be able to understand and drop in with season 14 of Atlanta, which is coming up, right? Please go and watch it. Like, you should. I mean, do yourself a favor. But the guide is really a beginner's guide for people who are trying to get in right now in a quick and efficient way.
Okay, even though I read the entire thing, it's just now occurring to me that it's a beginner's guide for people to get acclimated, but also still what I thought, the latter, a beginner's guide to like the world of Housewives in general. But yes. There's a dual purpose because there is a moment you did include. There's the idea that like you can cheat in Housewives and watch reunions, which I fully, you do whatever, guys, whatever you want to do. We're so many years in. It's
just
hard.
Life get caught hard. Up. Get caught up in the just way get, that you
honestly,
have to get caught up.
You don't need to be a purist. And on some of these seasons, I would honestly recommend that you skip. But you guys did highlight last season's reunion for Orange County in a way that I was like gagged a little. Like I was like taken aback a little bit. Having not seen it, I still need to see it. I skipped last season, but like I was surprised.
I also skipped last season too. But you know what? It's necessary, right? That reunion would give you, you know, sort of like the overarching sort of arcs of the season and get you caught up with where you need to be so you can dive in and meet Noella and understand where we are, right? And understand Shannon Bedore and understand these women, right? It's like I will say like I've probably watched, this is kind of a crazy question. I'm going to ask you this question too. Of the Housewives universe, I think I've probably seen at least 70% of all of the episodes, I think. I'm gonna say that. But like, and I've skipped seasons. Like, I did not watch that last season of OC either, right? But even from that 70%, like, there are things, like, I haven't seen every single episode of every single season. And I think that's okay. And still we're trying to provide guidance. I think it's okay. So it's like,
it's okay. It's a safe space.
It's a safe space, right? So you gotta do what you gotta do. And yeah, we will, it's not all the flashiest episodes too. I think people thought we were just gonna give like the best hits, like the most like iconic one-liners and like the most like the titular moments, and we definitely have some of those. We have Teresa's table flip, we have I made it nice, we've got a bunch, we have Bolo, but we also have we have Bolo.
I was surprised by that too.
It's so important to me, but into we also we all, we also have like narrative things that you need to understand. It's like, oh, you don't know who Sheree is? This is who Sheree is. Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, you don't know what happened with like Teresa and Melissa? Here's an episode that's about just like Teresa and Melissa's relationship, right? That might not be as flashy, but again, this wasn't a best of list. There are plenty of those on the internet of the best episodes. This was a what you need to know, beginner's guide. Here are the characters. Here are the people. And here's the vibe of each franchise. I do think that we got like the episodes that will tell you like, this is what you're getting into. And hopefully you find a franchise or you find a couple and you're like, actually, this is so great. I'm going to start at the beginning and just go through them all. And that's what I hope. I hope it opens the door for people to just run away with it and watch every episode of every season.
And it does also show that you don't need to watch every episode of everything to be a historian, to be a commenter on the culture as pertaining Housewives. Now, I have seen every episode of every franchise at least twice.
Wow.
Minus last season of Orange County, which I have not seen. It is the only season of a U.S.-based, and then I've also seen the first 3 seasons of Melbourne, and then the... I have watched Cheshire, the first like couple episodes.
Okay, wow. Wow, I'm like, this is like, I'm giving a standing ovation. You can't see it, but that's dedication. That's amazing. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. And honestly, everyone should aspire to that level of housewives fluency and that level. That's like, that's academic, really. It really is. It's expertise, right? But for those who are, you know, are getting started a little bit late, who haven't, for whatever reason, you know, haven't figured out how to make housewives a priority in their lives, I hope the guide is helpful as a way in. Because everyone needs a way in. Everyone needs a way in.
I mean, a friend of mine reached out to me and she said, I want to get into housewives. You know, my brother suggested, I think, Salt Lake. What would you do? And I sent her your article, number
yes.
one.
Thank you.
And then I spiraled because I was like, I honestly was like, maybe Miami, but like start with three, but like skip the, what are we on now? Four?
We're on four.
Skip the first three.
Yeah, four. Yeah.
I was like, because it's just so like sparkly and it's a whole lot of fucking fun, but like you're not going to understand Alexia. And then I thought about it. I was like, I agree with your brother. Just do Salt Lake. It's the easiest to catch up on and it's crazy.
I just told a friend because they were like, should I start with Roni or should I just start with Salt Lake? And I was like, mm-mm. I really want you to like this. Like, I really want you to get involved. Right. And the thing is, like, sometimes you just got to get, you got to get in with the fastest so you can get into the conversation mm-hmm. so that you can be up to date. So I was like, you know what? Save Roni. I'll get you to Roni when we, once we get through Salt Lake. Salt Lake, there's still enough time to breeze through the first season and be caught up for like the season finale this week. So it's like, I'm like, I very much, it's a hard game. And guess what? Miami, I didn't see the first three seasons of Miami. I dove in this season, obsessed with it. Alexa, I'm like, it's so good. It's like I even forgot, but you know what they need to do though? I'm sorry. This is like, they gotta get rid of like a Vanderpump or something and just, and give the slot to Real Housewives of Miami. Because being on Peacock, it does sort of make it, it's, I don't want them to change the show, but I think it needs to be, to get the respect that it deserves, it's gotta get bumped up to the big leagues. It needs to be on Bravo.
I mean, I feel like I don't disagree. I feel like the strategy is to give Peacock some, like, juggernauts.
Yeah.
I mean, VPR, I haven't watched any of this season for no other reason than it looked stupid. And I was like, I think I'm good. I think I've, like, got my quota on dumb. Like, I'm a survivor of yeah. last season's New York. So, like, I need a reward. Self-care means skipping.
It
sometimes.
Really is. And honestly, you really have to. I saw, like, 20 minutes of the reunion and I was like, wait, this was what the season was about? We missed nothing. It was nothing.
Oh my God, I just remembered I did watch the reunion, which I did enjoy.
There you go.
I did watch the reunion, but I didn't watch any of this.
That's all that you need for this. That's all that you need. But I feel like it's time to like, maybe, yes, Peacock does need the boost of Miami, but I feel like we downgrade VPR to Peacock status and we upgrade Miami for the next season. That's what I would do. That's what I would tell Andy. Which I will tell Andy.
They deserve. And you should tell Andy, get him on the phone. Maybe we'll do a Patreon. We'll just like shoot the shit with Andrew C. I mean, he's got a star. He is a star.
He is a star. Hollywood Walk of Fame, babe. We love to see it. We love to see it.
But I do want to shift gears a little bit because,
yes.
Listen, Orange County, great episode. Lot to talk about. Yeah. Noella.
She is so, so out of pocket, and she is so wrong sometimes, and yet she is so unbelievably watchable and so compelling. I mean, like, I again was like ready to sell OC down a river. Like, I was not gonna watch it anymore. I was like out. I was out. And I'm sorry, the power of Noella and Heather did bring me back in. Like, that is like characters. All it takes is one, and we got two people to make it worth watching. Because really, Gina and Emily are like half of a housewife each, and you put them together and you get sort of like one housewife. But Noella is so, she is so certifiably, like, we say this about Mary Cosby all the time, and I'm going to get to that when we get to Salt Lake City, how she's, like, unwell and she shouldn't be on television. Noella should not be on television right now. Like, her life is crumbling around her in every capacity. She's not totally with us. But you know what? I'm happy to be on the journey with her. And I disagree with her, but I have love for her. And I like that she has Heather's number because Heather thinks she's that girl, but she's not that girl.
And Shannon's not going to be the one to take Heather on. Shannon is scared.
Tired.
Like, I'm going to get you into poverty if you even say one thing to me that gives me like pause. I am going to, I'm going to break you financially because I know that's the best way to crush. So yes. Shannon's not going to take it on. I do appreciate that Noella is, you know, fighting the good fight, but yeah. It's like, I know that there's so much about her behavior that is due to the level of absolute chaos going on in her personal life.
Yes.
But I don't think she would be super different had that not happened.
I don't.
And it's super unfair, but I kind of feel that because she was so close with Bronwyn. Is that terrible?
No, they have the same energy. They're both women who have nothing to lose in a way, even though they definitely did have things to lose, and we watched them lose things. Like that's a big part of their arc. But they act like they're women with nothing to lose. They will do and say anything. They are scorched earth. I mean, I will say, like, I never want to agree with Heather, and I don't even believe. I mean, calling Noella's gift pornography is like a stretch. Okay, like, was it inappropriate? Sure, but pornography, like, Heather, you say that you're smart. You chose your words. You have a very big vocabulary, and we know that about you. You chose that very specifically. But, like, Noella, I mean, that's comedic gold. Noella being like, absolutely not. How dare you come for me? And then, like, one card is read, and she's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Like, that's that sort of whiplash moment. I was like, that's like, you can't, not everyone is built like that. I think that she's bringing a much-needed spark, youthfulness, energy, absolute just chaos to the proceedings that has been missing. I mean, Bronwyn sort of brought that, but hers was much sadder because Bronwyn had a lot to lose and like a husband and she has seven kids and like, and it was dark, it was alcoholism, it was a coming out story. There was like so much going on that we sort of felt the weight of it. Whereas with Noella, it's like, she has like arguably like as much going on with her husband just divorcing her, moving to Puerto Rico. But it doesn't feel as heavy on her. She doesn't wear it as heavily. It's just like, it's light. It's distressing. It's dark. But even her, like, losing her brain in the sweat lodge, like, I was like, ooh, get her out of there. But I wasn't like, ah!
Yeah, there's a different vibe that's happening. And it's also interesting when you think about, like, what a person has to lose when joining Housewives, because it's so often connected to, like, what do you think? What does that individual housewife think the stakes are? Are the biggest stakes losing your marriage, losing your close friendships of several years, as we're watching on Salt Lake? Or are the stakes for you no longer being on the show?
Yeah.
Because it feels like on Salt Lake, like with Noella, I would argue that maybe the stakes being connected to the show are pretty high for her.
Yeah.
And I would say even more so on Salt Lake, like these women are fighting each other, but it really feels like they're fighting for their role on the future of their show a little bit. No?
Yeah, because the show has taken over their entire lives. And like even and you can see, because it's like we don't really see that in Roni and in other OC characters and in Beverly Hills, because they're so secure. They've made it. They've paid their dues. They're ready. But these new characters and these new franchises, anybody can stay or go. Anything, it's touch and go. It could be ripped out from them in a second. And they become acclimated to like the success and the fortune and the Instagram followers and the comments and the fame and all of that stuff. And so like, yeah, really the overarching thing is like most of them will honestly do or say anything to stay on the show. And then when you find one that doesn't, like Mary M. Cosby, that's when sparks literally fly and you're like, what is going on? And it's actually that also, you need both. You need people who need it more than anything. And then you also need people who do not realize what they have or don't even want it. And that's sort of like, I think where we get some amazing tension. But you're right, Noella, like the stakes, this is the biggest and most important thing in her life. Second to her child, I'll give her that. But I think I think this is sort of if that's 1A, I think this is 1B or 1AA is being a cast member on Real Housewives of Orange County.
Yeah, and I think a little bit about what's going on in Salt Lake with Meredith, and I just wonder, do these women really care about even the contentious fighting over when Shiva happened, essentially, for Meredith's dad? Like, do they really even genuine question, like, truly, do they really even care about this? Or are they fighting because the Jen stuff is too much, too dark, and this is just the easier battle to win?
Oh, it's, I definitely, I if that's actually a very good question. That's really wonderfully put. And I think that they don't care. I really don't. I mean, I think, and this is probably maybe my hottest take, I think the real villain of this season of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is 1, 2, 3, Heather.
Whitney!
Or I think it's Heather. But I think Whitney.
No,
but
I agree. I
think
they're
agree. In, I think together
bad
they're.
Weather. Bad
it's
weather.
Bad weather. It's Whitney and Heather, bad weather. And I do. Whitney, well, Whitney, it's like her Detective Iris and Beau shtick needs to end. Like, I'm like, she's got to take off the Sherlock Holmes hat. Like, she's like too, it's really ridiculous. But the thing is, like, Whitney's, and this, I say this with love, she's not smart mm-hmm. enough to be the masterminds to really be, that's why her approach is so bad and wrong, being like, going up to Meredith and being like, we don't believe when your dad's memorial was. It's like, she's not smart enough to do that. But Heather, criminal mastermind Heather, beloved Heather, who knows that she's like the people's champ, everybody finds her to be relatable and so great, and she sort of stays out of it, but she's the one sort of like, pulling all the, she's the marionette. She's pulling all the fucking strings, getting like Heather to do her bidding. Even at this point, getting Lisa Barlow to do her bidding. And Lisa Barlow knows that she's been backed in. This is why I love Lisa Barlow. Lisa Barlow knows she's been backed into a corner and is like, and is sort of fighting. She's always fighting for her life. I mean, we saw it specifically and most notably season one reunion when she was like, sort of like her whole season, she was sort of like, whatever. And she was like, mm-hmm. somebody sort of was like, if you don't amp it up here, you're not going to get asked back. And then she absolutely delivered. Lisa Barlow's fighting for her life, and she likes to be the one controlling the strings, but she keeps getting caught doing it, whereas Heather keeps getting away with it, honestly, beautifully. But I think we're creating a villain. I think we're seeing. I do not trust Heather, and I've said it. I like her. Do not trust her. Think that she is so much more responsible for the weird. I do think the line of questioning with Meredith is like kind of. I mean, like if we really think about it, like. That's so, it's so gross.
So inappropriate.
It's so inappropriate.
It's so trash.
Her
it's
dad is dead.
Trash.
Her dad died.
Her dad is dead.
Her dad, her is, dad dead. Is dead. Like, let her, like, who cares? Like, and then for Whitney to insinuate that that was the same thing as her dad being, like, sort of missing in action, like, it's not the same. Like, I'm sorry. It's like, hey, that's painful too, but it's not the same, I think. Like, this episode when Whitney was like, my dad is, I don't know, I haven't talked to my dad in a long time. How does she think I feel? And I'm like, that's not, you can't. Those are apples and oranges.
Well, Meredith's whole, like, comparison to try to get Whitney to understand how fucked this was, like, I don't believe that you don't talk to your dad. Yeah. Whitney heard that as, you don't believe my dad's an addict, which she doubled down on the after show. I was like, bitch, like, what?
Whitney's not smart. She's not there.
I think that Whitney is smart. She just has a different way of going about it than Heather, who can look at you dead on and be like, I'm here for you. I want to comfort you, Meredith. Like, why do you think that Lisa said all that stuff? And I watch her do it, and I'm like, does she believe what she's doing? Like, I believe her when she's saying it. That I'm like, oh, my God, what's happening to me?
It's pathological. And I knew that Heather was a criminal mastermind. And I say this with love because Heather is one of the only housewives that follows me on Twitter. And so she knows something. She knows.
Oh, yeah, no, she follows me on Instagram for the next 20 minutes.
Absolutely. And,
I appreciate that.
Well, that means she knows the game. And we've said this before, and she said it herself. She was a housewife super fan before getting on the show. So she knows how.
Right.
And she actually is, like, brilliant. Like, she's playing it brilliantly.
She's so smart.
Whereas Whitney, that's exactly like the Teresa thing last season, where, like, mm-hmm. Teresa, somebody was trying to, like, use an analogy. It was like, what if I said this about your daughter,
right,
Teresa?
Jackie. Right.
And then Teresa was like, I can't believe you said that about my daughter. And it's like, no, you're not. You don't know what a metaphor is. You don't know what an analogy is. And that's what happened with Whitney. And I'm like, there's just a level of cognition that I don't think. Not everyone is playing the same game or has the same tools in their tool shed to build these houses. And Whitney's house is looking lopsided when she comes at Meredith for her dad. I'm like, that's not the way to go about it. That's not, your argument is not that great. Also, it's like, does anybody understand how criminal, like, federal investigations work, like the FBI works? It's like, this has been in the works for 12 years. Like, Meredith did not just, like, pick up the phone and then, like, get the NYPD and the FBI to fly to Salt Lake City. Like, it is more like, I just, like, the level of just not understanding how basic things sort of work is honestly another reason why I tune in every week.
You know how at the beginning of each show they'll do, like, the "and last week on yada yada"? It feels to me with this storyline like everyone in the cast forgot what they said last week, because Whitney, at one point in a previous episode, was like, I explicitly don't believe that you reported stuff to the FBI. I'm just asking the question because I'm on a TV show and I feel like maybe that's good TV. But then she goes back to it and she's like, you know what? I thought about it. Or maybe I always knew this and I like didn't say it correctly and I'm totally changing my mind. But like, maybe you did have something to do with it. And it's, I'm not speaking ill of your dead father. I'm just saying that his Shiva call or funeral or whatever you want to call it didn't happen, that you were lying about your dead father. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying anything bad about him. I'm just saying that since he has passed this earth, may mm-hmm. his memory be a blessing mm-hmm. unless, you know, his spirit is watching this season, in which case there's going to be a real crisis here.
There is. Well, I think that just proves my point with Whitney, where it's like, I think she's a great... I mean, I think Salt Lake City, for however much longer it lasts, was one of the best things that ever... Because their travel, it was one of the best things that ever happened to us with casting, because I do think everyone has a part to play. And I do think Whitney, she couldn't keep up. She couldn't keep all these threads going in her brain. So her wires keep getting crossed. And I mean, I do think what Mary said, I will say, Mary, I hope and I pray, and I know this is politically incorrect, and I know that people are going to be mad, but I hope that like the thing happens where, like, when the person that cancels you gets canceled, then you get uncanceled so the Mary can come back next season. Because, I mean, it was like, I mean, Jenny is gone. Jenny's canceled. Mm. Racist confirmed. Or, like, not even rest in peace. Just bye. Go lie down. Yeah, when you're dead, lie down. That's like, thank you, Heather, for that. DeBro. But I just like, Mary is such a absolute unique. Absolute nutcase, a nut job. And I do think she's unwell. I do think there's a lot of trauma there. And I do think that's like, that's not to make light of that. But I also, she is the funniest woman in America. She's so funny. She makes me laugh out loud.
You called her the funniest woman in America.
I guess I didn't even mean to say that, but I said that. I think she's the funniest woman in America. And when she said, and when she was like, Whitney's been drinking, Whitney's been knocking him back. I was like, wait, that's hilarious. And it was true. Like, Whitney, the reason why Whitney was acting so crazy in that line of questioning is because she was drunk. Like, it's like, that's, she makes some observations. The Lisa Barlow, your kids eat a Taco Bell too much. Like, I'm sorry, out of left field, but it did land for me. It did land for me.
Her line delivery of like, pause, women. I can't take my eyes off her. I miss her already.
And I miss her.
She has said racist things. She has said ignorant things on the show. I'm not taking that away. The church stuff is a lot.
It's a lot.
My God, do we need this energy on Salt Lake? Otherwise, it would be Jen Shaw all the time. And you guys, we would be fucking tired.
We'd be tired. Honestly, kudos to Jen. And I came in strong. And I did not like Jen first season. I still don't really like Jen at all. Mm. I'm like, she is exhausting. She feels like way more fake and manufactured than the other ladies. But I will say, it is kind of amazing and impressive that in a season where she's literally been arrested for a felony by the FBI, she's been arrested mm-hmm. by the FBI, she has somehow made Meredith the monster. That she's somehow like been able to, she has worked it such that she seems like sort of like relatively breezy and like devil may care and is like throwing parties, and like Meredith and Mary are the ones that are like sort of like the dark forces and the dark energy. So it's like, I will give her props where props are due. That's impressive. But I could not. If you have one Jen, you need at least 4 to 6 people to sort of like disseminate that and just sort of like balance that energy off. And I just like, I Mary is one of those people. I'm sorry. And I do want to make it clear.
Disclaimer. We got it.
Disclaimer.
We got it.
We don't accept anything that she says, Mary, but sometimes she makes me laugh.
You know what? We here at Andy's Girls, we do believe that 2022 is the year of not learning. I highly encourage that people do not learn that we're just dumb and happy, in the words of Pet Shop Boy.
Absolutely.
Just be a fucking moron. We deserve it.
Vibes only.
But there is also the idea that like, you can think two things at once, and you can appreciate some of the line readings and like spiritual non sequiturs that are the experience of understanding Miriam Cosby on TV, and also hate some of the stuff that she's said and feel very uncomfortable about stuff that she's done. And also, P.S., feel a certain way about the fact that Jenny is going to have the last word on Mary M. Cosby. Yeah. My God.
It does put a little bit, again, it's so much terrible stuff has happened in this season with the two of them. But their fight does, it adds a different color once you see Jenny's Facebook post. And it just, it adds another perspective that we were missing, I think, for the whole season is like what, something was off there from the beginning. And I don't even know if Mary was aware of that, but sometimes you can just feel, it's an energy thing. You can just feel it. And like they're head to head. And again, I will say, I will not miss Jenny. I thought Jenny was, she would have been, I would have like, I could have taken her or left her like before all of that stuff came out. But it is crazy that she's going to get that. I mean, this is going to be an explosive reunion. I mean, Meredith sees the Lisa. Okay, so this is my question for you. Was Lisa Barlow, was it a hot mic moment? Was it a hot mic? Was it a hot mic moment?
Okay. To answer that, okay, is to take a little bit of a journey. And I'm so glad.
Please, we got nothing but time.
I mean, nothing but time. It's turtle time here at Andy's Girls HQ. Is it a hot mic moment? I think we first need to understand that in that moment, Lisa was truly quitting the show. She had her producer in there. Security was on standby.
Okay.
Which is a whole other literally what. But she was quitting the show. I don't know that she was thinking, and there's been conversation about boom mics and not boom mics, whatever.
Yes.
I don't know that she was thinking this is going to air on TV, but I do know that she instinctively was like, there are a lot of things that I have felt for a while and I'm going to say them out loud.
Yes.
And then she said, here's your mic. I don't know that she was thinking this is going to air on TV. I think it was probably a shock for her to realize that it was going to be used.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is what happens when you have a tension and close and listen. Lady friendships are really fucking nuanced and sometimes very complicated and very tough. And I think she has been sitting on a lot of feelings about Meredith and their dynamic on the show and off. And she had enough. So I don't know if that answers the question. I need to get your thoughts.
No, it totally did. And you said something so beautiful, which is that lady friendships are very complicated and very nuanced. And I'm going to actually sort of go exactly against that and say in the plainest terms. I mean, I think that's true. But like, if we're being dumb and happy, basically Lisa Barlow and Meredith's relationship is literally Gretchen Wieners and Regina George. That's all it is. Meredith is Regina, Lisa is Gretchen, and she reached her Gretchen boiling point. She was like, she's always been second fiddle in there's always been that dynamic of Meredith's on top and Lisa's not on top, even though Lisa is just as smart and just as pretty and just as talented and why should Caesar be Caesar? Like that was her why shouldn't Brutus be Caesar? Like that was her that moment. And we saw it manifesting in real time. And I do think she's a manipulator, but I don't think she's—
Who's the she?
Lisa is a manipulator. Okay. I do think Meredith is not, dare we say, engaged enough to like manipulate anything. Things just like happen to her and what. But like she's Regina, so she floats above. But Lisa Barlow is a classic Gretchen Wieners type, and all of those frustrations, all of that comes from that high school place of not really of being like secondhand to the it girl, but not being the actual it girl, and knowing that you could and being loyal and wearing pink on Wednesdays when she said to wear pink and having her back and not getting it reciprocated. So I do think that was like an act, and the reads, I will say, like, even if it was, I don't actually care if it was like if she knew the mic was if she was on camera or whatnot. The level of specificity, not until today when Azealia Banks dragged Kanye West.
Oh my God.
Have I
a symphony.
A symphony. Unbelievable. Not since today. I guess that's today. But Lisa Barlow is just as specific. It's honestly poetry. Your dumb fucking family who poses. Like, come on. Like, your husband can't even hold down a job. It's like, these are all such disparate emotional thoughts that are coming from a place where she is clearly reached her, like, I'm sick of this, whether it's meta about filming, whether it's personal, whether they were ever friends. But Lisa, she was done being Gretchen Wieners. And you know why I do think it's also real on top of that is because I think the top of this recent episode, when she starts crying and wielding the fucking blow dryer as a weapon and scream, like, she starts breaking down again because she realizes she just said all of that on camera. Mm-hmm. I think she starts the metacognition of, like, I just, like, absolutely, like, I'm going to look like a monster. I like that sort of freak out when she starts screaming at Meredith in person to sort of like, she's going to justify talking about her behind her back. I think then we saw her being sort of an operator, and then like the literal fear of, oh my fucking God, what did I just do? I may have completely fucked this up. Everyone's going to hate me. That kicked in, and that made the top of this episode really fantastic for me. So I give a round of applause for Lisa. It really, that's a tough spot to be in. Like, my girly, I feel you. It's not fun to be second fiddle. Sometimes you got to stand up for yourself, even if that means being an absolute terrorizing, terrible bitch. And I love it. I love it.
Friendships, and I think about it through the lens of women's friendships, which is like the whole point of Housewives, they are very complicated and they can be a seesaw. Like, at one point, one person takes the weight, at another point, another does. But if you feel like it's constantly uneven, or if your perspective, you feel like there's just no weight being given to it, that can do something to a person. It's like your close friend, maybe your best friend, you can almost feel gaslit in the experience of having a relationship with this person. And I think for Lisa, literally anything could be said. She was already at an 11. She was waiting for someone to light the match. She had all of the baggage of Meredith saying, you don't support me, you don't stand up with me and for me. And the number one example is your friendship with Jen. And Lisa is like, okay, cool. Now, what do you do about Mary? And she's still getting pushback for that. Literally, the fuse has already been lit. Yeah. We're just waiting for someone to take notice of the flames.
It's a powder keg. It was a powder keg. And it finally set off in a really, again, it could have been set off in a million ways. She could have just cried. She could have yelled directly at Meredith. But the way that it was set off, the bathroom moment, it really is, I think, instantly like, yeah, iconic. It's literally it's Housewives iconography. It was so specific and so beautifully executed and so deeply felt. It really, it's, again, when I talked about the beginning, we have the mind going a mile a minute, we have the heart going a mile a minute, and they meet perfectly in the middle in that moment. And that's why Lisa Barlow is a god-tier housewife. I don't think we say it enough. She is a god-tier housewife. She is Hello Baby Gorgeous, feeding her kids lines, trying to manipulate things behind the scenes and kind of failing, lying to people, sort of, but also being loyal when she thinks, trying to play the game, making missteps all along the way, and yet always being sort of composed until she loses it. Oh, it's why I tune in. It's what we came here for. And I don't think she gets enough credit, because it's like, oh, like Meredith like talks funny, but like with Meredith, and we have to be honest, there's really no there. Beyond the epaulettes and the slurred speech, I don't think we have, things happen to her. And like, it's interesting to watch things happen to her, but there's really no there. There's no story driving. And like the friendship with Mary, that sort of happened to her, because Mary was like, okay, I guess I have to be friends with one of these ladies. I can't just walk around my closet all day and talk to mannequins. I choose Meredith because she is Regina George, you know, that's like, and that's where that came from. And she just sort of lets it happen. She's not actively contributing to that friendship. She's just sort of like, it's there and it's convenient and everyone else is sort of mean to her. So I think the dynamics on that show are sort of, they're like, they're operating on so many frequencies and so much is happening that I could watch it ad nauseum or ad infinitum. And I plan on, until we get to next season and there are no cast members left. And then we have to, I don't know. That's maybe where we bump up Miami, and Miami gets that slot. I don't know. I have hope for the future, but I also, we got to be realistic. It's like, we're batting, you know, our roster is pretty light looking at season 3.
And that's the wild thing, is like, this week's episode was so fucking insane. And I had a lot of feelings. I really just honestly had a lot of feelings about Whitney, what Whitney was doing, and totally agree with you about Heather, while really appreciating, obviously, both of them on the show. But like, we have gone so hard this season with real life shit and then stuff on camera. How does the show keep up this kind of pace when season 3 is going to be someone on trial in federal court?
Yeah.
Outside, by the way, I don't know if she's going to like fly back and forth to film, or if Salt Lake is now starring in the Big Apple. Like, how do we even
they take a group
figure
trip
out the direct
tour right? trial like, a six like month
group trip, but they can't film inside.
That doesn't make any sense. Oh, and it was honestly so like again, it's crazy to me. And I honestly sort of understand, like, Mary, like, she probably does have real shady shit because she was like, I'm literally not going to go to the reunion because, like, she has things to hide. But, like, Jen being, like, talking about Stuart, who we know flips on her and is like, well, why can't we talk to Stuart? Like, Stuart's on my side, right? It's just like, oh, my God. This is, like, you're playing this for the cameras. You think you're Roxy Hart, but this is actually real life. Like, this is actually, like, this is so bad. So, I don't know. I feel like some things burn out quickly, like stars, some stars shine so bright and they burn out faster than others. And I'm not saying that's Salt Lake City, but I wouldn't be surprised. Though I definitely could get into watching Jen fly back and forth for trial. I do think that would be interesting to me.
Yeah. Also, what did her mom sign when she's like, my mom and Coach Shaw sign? I was like, ooh, can we not have your mom sign anything when you brought glam to Zion? Like,
yeah.
Can we maybe leave the retired teacher out of this a little bit? Do you really not have a single asset to your name?
Yeah. And that's, I will say, I know people were like, who cares if she has assets when Meredith was like, she has no assets. But I was like, Meredith, that is a good point. Like, I would not personally be accepting gifts from Jennifer Shaw right now. Like, I wouldn't be doing that. And I do respect that. And I just, you got to protect yourself. You have to protect yourself because no one's going to protect you. So I do see Meredith for that. And I do respect that.
I mean, I want, my number one question at the reunion is how many of you kept the diamond snowflake? No judgment from me, by the way.
Yeah.
J'adore a diamond, albeit I don't love like modern contemporary, but regardless, I don't know that I in general would turn down a surprise diamond gift, but like how many of you kept it?
Yeah.
I just want to know. No judgment. I just want to know how many of you kept it. And Meredith, I know that you looked uncomfortable, but I just want to know if you kept
it. Did you keep it? Mary loves things, so Mary definitely probably kept it and gave it to her favorite mannequin. Or maybe her least favorite mannequin, whom she, you know, maybe her Jen voodoo doll mannequin, which she definitely has. That's a really great question. And I wouldn't be accepting gifts at this time. I would just sort of wait to see how the trial unfolds.
I mean, innocent until proven guilty. If totally, it's vintage. Totally. Honestly, if it's like a beautiful stone, then innocent until proven guilty. Absolutely. All day long.
My boyfriend's a public defender. I believe innocent until proven guilty. But Jen, you're giving us a lot. You're giving a lot of people a reason to be skeptical. a lot of reason for that.
Yeah.
I do wish her the best. I do wish Coach the best. I did have a friend who just got into Salt Lake City, the same friend who I was trying to get, who I told to start Salt Lake City. He was like, he was 4 episodes in, and he was like, I think I have to draw the line at Jen Shaw calling her husband Coach Shaw. Like,
that's
I just don't think that doesn't ring true. That seems ridiculous to me. And I was like, well, then you're in for a treat, because if that's the line, then you're gonna go down the rabbit hole. But it is really, I mean, it is hilarious. The Coach Shaw, I mean, poor coach.
Remember when we would have the Coach Shaw pep talk and how great those were? And now we know what he was talking, you know, it's like counseling your wife. I don't know. You either did a really good or a really bad job, because she certainly seemed inspired.
She certainly seems, yeah, and honestly, he must be doing a good job, because she seems sort of light as a feather on these trips in Zion. She seems like, you know, she seems happier than many people that I know, given the circumstances. So you know what? Maybe he's still giving the pep talks. Maybe everything is good. Maybe we'll see that everything's good in the Shaw household, and her and Coach will ride off into the sunset. And that's, you know, we should only be so lucky. But if there is a season 3, I will be tuning in to see what happens there. When she literally compared herself to Jesus Christ in the episode, and she said, how many times have I been crucified by these ladies, in her defense against Meredith? I was like, oh, that's really like Jen, Jesus, Jensis. She has a Jensis complex. It's like, I'm like, absolutely. She absolutely does, you know. say what you will about religion, but there is a real Jesus Genesis parallel there, and then she feels it, and who, you know, the cock crowed three times. Was it Meredith? Who's to say? Somebody gave her up. There are parallels to that here, and I think that's another. It's a biblical story that we're telling here in Salt Lake, and that can't be overlooked.
And you know she's gonna triple down on the reunion. I just can't get over the juxtaposition of her continuing in Zion to like yell and scream about how Meredith harmed her reputation, aka with the feds who then went back in time and then fast forward to the future and created this thing because of something that Meredith did. And then we get that really awkward, odd scene with her lawyer, who I want to understand a little bit more about.
Well, is he still her lawyer? Like, I don't know.
I think he's the only one left.
Oh, God.
I think because the fancy firm's skadoodled. But there is that moment of like, and you know, we're fighting together, you know, you and Stu, but like, not really. And there's going to come a point where he is probably going to testify against you. And she just takes it. Her closest person, they've cried together. She skated around her office with him. They were like brother and sister family level vibes. And she just nods and goes along her merry way.
I don't think she's fully grasping the gravity of the situation. I think she's like, she gets into camera mode and the cameras are on, her makeup was done. And she's sort of like, this is for the cameras and this is for the show. But I don't really, again, I think we're all dealing with different sort of like depths of water, really, in terms of, you know, capacity for understanding and whatnot. And I feel like hers, at least when the camera's on, or at least in that scene, I think it was pretty shallow waters we were in. And I don't think she was really listening. I don't think she was actively listening to what her lawyer was saying, and that, like, guess what? Stu will betray you, a la Peter and the cock and the crow. You will be betrayed. It's Stu, or he could potentially betray you, which is what he did. So it is a sight to behold. And again, are these choices and decisions, if I am ever caught up in a 12-year Ponzi scheme, telemarketing fraud, would I take my meetings with my lawyer on camera? I don't think that I would. But am I glad that Jen does? Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I also have another question. What do you think about, what do you think about the slut-shaminess of Lisa Barlow saying Meredith slept with half of New York?
I thought it was iconic.
I mean, that I think it's literally...
It was not Berkshire's. It was not what happened with Bethany and Luann.
No,
I thought
it
was hilarious, and Lisa was doing her thing, and I felt nothing but support for like one of the best monologues in recent history.
Absolutely. And guess what? And if Meredith was doing that, so what? She was separated. Let her do it. Let her do it and let Lisa feel whatever type of way she feels about it. I felt, I was like, no harm, no foul there. I was like, that's good, clean fun that we're having in that.
It's good, clean fun, except that a part of last season was talking about the fact that Meredith and Seth were separated, and Lisa using the phrase that, like, she cheated on her husband is, you know, we can play the fun little dance of, like, it's cheating if you're not fully divorced, but, like, no, that's not the case,
and every couple
is different, and their boundaries and understandings are totally different in private, but, like, if her good friend is using the phrase cheated several times, I wonder if she's saying that because she's shifting into her perception of what was happening because they were still married, or was Meredith literally having affairs, which, P.S., I fully support, understanding more about Seth being trash. Mm. But like,
oh, he's literally the worst.
Literally, he's so gross now. When he appears on screen, I'm like, enough with this one.
I know,
like,
it's weird.
Enough.
I used to think he was kind of attractive, and then it just, like,
after the Whitney boobs, I was done after the boob cake. Like, don't ruin frosting with that. Yeah, no.
That's a wrap on Seth. I'm not.
Talk about sacred food groups.
The thing is, I forget that literally Lisa is Mormon. Like, I forget that all the time. So I'm actually more inclined to believe that, like, Meredith wasn't really cheating, and it was just like the separation, and that Lisa is being hardline Mormon, you know, with her husband, whose name I can literally never remember, and I don't remember it right now.
John.
Okay, really an easy name to remember.
Is it John?
I mean, that feels right. It could be Jim, John,
right.
Jimbo.
Right. Feels right.
Jimbo Barlow. Ooh, that would be good. I just know there's been discussion about that, and I do think I'm inclined to believe that Lisa was coming from a place of you like broke your vows because you were separated and cheated. I don't really,
yeah.
I don't think it was much more than that, but I do think it's, you know, it's, these are low blows and I can see them not being able to come back for this and I from this, and I would like to see them not come back from this in a season three and at a reunion.
Yeah, I just have to, you know, I got into this on a Patreon episode with Ryan Houlihan that you guys can listen to now, where we did.
Oh, I like Ryan. Ryan's great.
He's great. On the last AG classic, we did AG Theater, where I read it as a monologue. On Patreon, Ryan did it as a monologue, and then we duetted, and both in our own intonations came together to sing the Lisa Barlow moment.
Yes.
But it felt like a little bit of like a Tiffany Pollard, Gemma, Big Brother.
Yeah.
Beautiful music. It just really did.
It's operating again as the resident playwright here. It was beautifully written and beautifully performed. And I want to, and we're not, and guess what? And guess who's not giving us moments like that? I don't know why I have her number today, but Heather on Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is not giving us those moments. Not this season. She's comic relief, and we're getting Shakespearean thespian actress from Lisa Barlow. Manic, we're getting King Lear, we're getting Richard III, mm-hmm. we're getting, you know, absolute, like, deeply, deeply theatrical, high mm-hmm. drama, high stakes. It's Hamlet, it's, you know, it's all of the above. It's Ophelia, it's Desdemona, it's, how many can I name? I could keep going. It's Othello.
All of them. So impressed. Big BFA energy.
It's big BFA energy. It's big BFA energy. And she delivered.
And then there's Heather, who's doing great work, but you can no longer really call yourself the voice of the audience now. Because,
no,
babe,
you are
very involved in pulling the strings.
She's Iago. She's Iago. Ooh, that's my last Shakespeare reference, but she is, I promise. But that's what she is. She's doing, she's talking to the audience. She's letting us in, but she's also pulling the strings and sort of keeping us out, and wants to, and she thinks that she's getting away with it, but she's not fooling me.
Noting that we essentially know the answer to this question, judging by our Instagram stories of recent, do you think that who is more likely to develop a genuine, as close to genuine friendship next season? Meredith and Jen or Meredith and Lisa?
Oof, it's crazy that I'm going to say Meredith and Jen just based off of the, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not fully up to date on the Instagram stories, but I know that Meredith and Lisa are not talking.
Yeah.
And I do feel there's probably more hurt there, because I actually believe I do understand that Real Housewives of Salt Lake City was sort of an amalgam. They were all sort of thrown together, and, like, you know, Mary didn't know any of these girls or whatever. I do think that Meredith and Lisa, maybe I'm dumb, but I do feel that they were actually friends before the show. And
oh my God,
like,
good friends.
They were like
really good friends.
They were like really good friends.
Yes.
So it's like, I do think that history, that's a lot harder to come back from, where it's like, mm-hmm. Jen's going to quickly realize that, like, Meredith didn't have nothing to do with her getting arrested. And I think she'd be willing to, like, get back. And I think that's way more likely to sort of get sorted out than Meredith and Lisa. That being said, you know, you simply never know with these women. So I wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be shocked if they find a way through it. But it feels too raw right now. The Meredith and Lisa, it feels too raw.
And that's one of those things where, like, you know, your good friend who felt like a part of your family, maybe closer, you know, this is where the chosen family comes in and is so mm-hmm. important to you. That person is so influential in your life. But the opposite is true when you break up. Like, there is nothing worse than a friendship breakup. I think worse than romantic relationships, because the friends know about the romantic. The friend knows the real you. So what happens when you decide you don't like that person anymore? It is tough to circle back to. Like, why would you even want to, arguably? Why would you want to do that? You've already seen them at their worst.
You've already seen them. The thing is, and this goes back to why I, like, love Lisa and Meredith. I'm like, she's take her or leave her. I'm not really invested in her. Whereas Lisa is all in. Everything Lisa mm-hmm. does is all in. She's all in with Meredith. She's all in on Taco Bell. She's all in on Vita Tequila. She's all in on
Diet
Sundance.
Coke.
She's all in on Diet Coke. She does everything full throttle. And yeah, is it annoying? Is it insane? Yes, but it's amazing TV. Meredith is, she doesn't even know how to be all in. There's no, like, she can't. She's just sort of, like, waifs through life. And she's sort of, you know, she's like, she's not even all in on our marriage. Ooh, That was crazy what I just said, but I did say it. She's like,
I don't disagree.
She's not capable of being, she's not an all-in type of person. So I think the loss of Lisa or what she's doing to Lisa doesn't affect her in the same way as like what, as it's affecting Lisa. Like Lisa was all in on this relationship. And like, yeah, did she make some miscalculations, Regen? She did. Mm-hmm. I think she thought, hey, I've made another season. Jen's on the outs. I gotta get screen time. I gotta be friends. Like, I think she made some miscalculations there in terms of how that would affect her relationship with Meredith. But Meredith is so incapable of being like fully like mm-hmm. in or fully committed to anything that I don't think losing Lisa or like cutting her out of her life is going to be that hard. And I think that's going to kill Lisa.
Who do you think is a better friend, Lisa or Meredith?
Oh, I absolutely think Lisa's a better friend than Meredith. I think she hasn't made great decisions, but in terms of their friendship, I think that mm-hmm. she's made some mistakes with their friendship. But I think I'm saying this and I do think she's done a lot of messed up stuff this season. But I think generally Lisa's probably a better friend and a more loyal friend and like someone who has the potential and the capability of being a better friend. Yeah, I'm gonna go Lisa. I'm seeing all the ways that I'm wrong in my head and how people would be like, well, what about when she did this? Or what about when she did that? Or what about when she did this? But I gotta speak my heart. I think Lisa's a better friend.
I think she's a better friend to everybody but herself. And now she's trying to figure that out. A little bit, right? A little bit.
What did she say that literally killed me? When Heather was like, I feel bad for you, Lisa Barlow. And Lisa was like, I feel bad for me too.
Oh,
I was like, you know what? That is such a crazy thing to say, but I also feel bad. I feel bad for me too, and I feel bad for you, Lisa Barlow. But I am actually, she'll rise like a phoenix. I'm not worried. She's too strong. She's strong. She is strong. That's the thing. Meredith, I will say, is also pretty strong too. I'll give her that. But Lisa's strong. She's like, I think she's going to push through this.
I have to tell you, there's nothing stronger than this conversation tonight. I gotta tell you, you know I'm obsessed with you, and we both live in New York. And
we need to hang out.
Well, first off, obviously we need to go out. We need to hang out. We need to get drinks. We need a turtle time. We need to talk.
Oh yeah.
But also, you need to record. I need to figure out a way to, I don't know, from a period of 85 feet, triple masked, except we're all triple vaxxed.
I know, and I have
antibodies for years. Like,
same.
We need to record it. I would love to record with you in person.
We got to do it. We got it. And you know what? The public deserves that. They deserve our energy in the room together. I do.
Right?
I really believe that. I really do. I would love nothing more because we got to make it happen.
We got to make it happen. We got to. Honestly, open some champs, have a moment.
Oh my God. Now you're talking.
Honestly, Lisa Barlow, if you're listening, which you're not, aka you definitely are, Vita Tequila.
Send us some Vita Tequila. All right. I know Sundance isn't happening. Didn't happen this year. It was virtual. So I know you have bottles ready to go. Okay. And I will send you my address. DM me.
Yes.
Please, Lisa Barlow. I just went to bat for you. We did. Send us tequila.
Lisa Barlow, we spent an hour talking about how you are a superstar, and we all know it's true. And the best way for you to say, you know, let the people say amen is sending us some fucking tequila, because I want to go ham. And the best way to do that is with Vita. Listen, die for you. Love you to bits. Can't get enough.
Absolutely. Oh, this is a dream. A dream come true. I had the time of my life.
Same for days. Tell the people how to read your work, follow you online, what they can look forward to, what's coming up next. Tell me. Mention it all.
Oh, funny, the rubric of our Vanity Fair beginner's guide. So that was part of it. But yeah, no, I guess the best and easiest place to find me, as we said, I'm a staff writer at Vanity Fair in the TV, film, comedy, theater, Hollywood space. So any of that stuff, just Google my name, Chris Murphy, and vanityfair.com, and I'm there. And I'm also in the magazine, so go buy that in print sometimes.
Oh my God.
Have a fun issue coming up this March, so look out for the Hollywood issue. And then, let's see, I'm on Twitter, at ChrisStress, sort of like distress, but with a Chris in front of it, or a mistress, or, you know, but with a Chris in front of it. And then at Instagram, in the same handle. I'm afraid of TikTok, so I haven't gotten on that platform yet, but I'll let you know when I do. And yeah, I guess those are the best places to find me. And I love to share, you know, an errant housewife thought every now and again. So, you know, DM me, you know, retweet me, get mad at me, get angry at me, tell me that we didn't include enough Real Housewives of Atlanta in our guide, and I will tell you my peace of mind.
I love that. And P.S., you need to come back ASAP because I want to get your thoughts on Phaedra's return.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, what a hallowed day. I think we don't know what we've wrought with that. We have reaped and sowed something that we don't even... I don't think we understand how potentially chaotic...
Don't we? Isn't that the whole reason that I'm like, oh God, why?
I know, but also like, oh God, yes. Like, I think it's exactly. I'm ready for it again. I can get into a villain. I love a villain if they give me a reason to love them. And Phaedra, you know, my favorite mortician slash tax attorney in the land. So, I await her return. I am excited.
Oh God, I love it. I await yours as well, guys. Speaking of return, come. Be a part of the Patreon. What does it have to do with returning? I don't know. Return to my DMs and tell me that after you sign or level up. You know what I'm... Isn't that a sell? Is that...
Yeah, no, that works. That works for me. Return to the Patreon. Return to the Patreon.
Return to the Patreon. I love that. Every time for a good time. Wow, look at this. just like Shakespeare.
A wordsmith, even better. I would say so.
Speaking of fun things with words, Galentine's Day. That's right. I renamed Valentine's Day after myself, as one should.
Absolutely.
The Andy's Girls... Galentine's Day Zoom is this Friday, February 11th at 7:00 Eastern Standard Time. Join the Andy's Girls Patreon, get exclusive bonus episodes, invites like the upcoming Galentine's Day Zoom Kiki. And if you join the premium tier, the chance to record a Patreon up with yours truly. And while you're doing things online, follow me on Instagram at Dame Gally. It was my goal to get to 10K, to get a K before Galentine's. Don't know if it's going to happen.
That's okay. That's okay.
I don't know if it's going to happen, but spiritually I'm there.
Time is a construct, so you can totally, you know.
It is a construct.
It's a construct, so you know what?
It's not real.
It's not real.
It's not real.
Not real. Don't let it get you down. I love that.
Thank you. Guys, hope you're all doing okay. Chris and I are going to make plans to meet up in person and have some Vita Tequila. Anyway, guys, hope you're all doing great. I know you are, because so am I, and words are great. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.